to me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. And I'd like to welcome you from all over the world. Today, instead of beginning our program with health and nutrition that we do every day, we're going to give that a little later because we're going to have an exclusive interview with a friend who is helping make a difference in representing the voices of the Standing Rock tribes in North Dakota. That is Danny Sheehan. Now, Danny has been on this program many times. He's one of our nation's most important and influential constitutional public interest lawyers. And Danny is live at the Standing Rock and with many tribal members, Jackson Brown, Bonnie Raitt, many others are out there to support the tribal elders and the protest leaders. And we're going to give you the latest on that. And this land was affirmed to the Lakota and Mandan and Northern Cheyenne tribes in a 1951 treaty, and it was never ceded to the U.S. government. The Army Corps of Engineers has given the Sioux tribe until December 5th to evacuate. The mobilization of veterans now listed about 600 vets who are there to defend the protesters. They're planning on arriving on the 4th. Trump has a $500,000 investment in the ETP, the company doing the pipeline. He sold another, I believe he sold that yesterday or the day before. And on the record, Trump has supported the Keystone XL pipeline, which he said poses no environmental impact. Quote, I would absolutely prove it 100%. He said that back in May. I will be dealing with Trump a little later on in the show. I've come up with a new term, and I'm going to explain the new term. Plus, I'm also going to be spending the better part of a half hour today looking at the wise men and women of our past throughout the world, world history. What lessons they have for us today, they are so timely. And yet in their own day, many of these great minds were looked upon as heretics. So that will be a little later. Nice to have you with us today, Danny.
Terrific. Thank you, Gary. I'm glad to be here. I'm standing here in the Tribal Council chambers at Standing Rock Reservation up in southern North Dakota. We're in the middle of a preliminary meeting here of the council members. They're going to gather officially tomorrow morning to undertake a resolution, to consider a resolution officially inviting all of the water protectors to remain on their sacred lands, despite the order of eviction from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. This is supposed to take effect on the 5th of December. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is apparently trying to deputize the North Dakota State Police and the Morton County Sheriff's Department to come in to, if they choose to, remove all 6,000 people from the site that are there, barring the additional drilling. The equipment is all laid out there, attempting to drill under the lake and the river here, which the tribal people have ordered to be stopped. So I'm here in the tribal headquarters in their council chambers. It's snowing now. We have about 4 or 5 inches of snow here. The wind blowing sideways. And the tribal council people are kind of gathering to determine what positions they're going to take on this resolution tomorrow. I've drafted the resolution for them, and they're going to be, I believe, that we have 8 members already in support of it. And if, in fact, the resolution is passed, officially inviting the water protectors to stay and to pray on their holy grounds, that this is going to provide a defense, a complete defense, to the people against the charge of trespass. If the U.S. government is ordering them off the land and the tribal council and the people who are officially recognized by the U.S. government as being the custodians of this land are asking them to stay, the government, I believe, will know that this constitutes a complete defense to the people, and it may stave them off. It may cause them to back off. We're getting word this morning that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is drafting an amendment to the letter that they sent to Chairman David Archambault last Thursday, potentially modifying their position, but we haven't received it yet. But they know that the council is getting ready to consider passing this resolution. I am advocating that they pass the resolution to make this issue clear. And so that's where we are right now. I've just left the camp to come into Fort Yates to be here for this council gathering. But there are 6,000 people on the site right now. There are over 1,000 encampments there of the teepees and major lodges that are there. It's, of course, sub-freezing here right now. And on the hillside, you can see the police, the North Dakota State Police and the Sheriff's Department all arrayed on the top of the hill in full combat uniforms with riot gear. And they have airplanes flying over the site here. I don't know what they think they're doing, but they have helicopters going back and forth across the top of us to make sure that no one is assaulting the police, I guess. They've blocked off the bridge at the north end of the camp. They've closed off Highway 1806 that comes into the campsite from the north. So they've already sealed off the campsite from the north. The south is all completely undisputed Native territory for Standing Rock, so we can come and go through that southern route. But the State Department of Transportation is refusing to come in to plow the roads here this morning unless they can be guaranteed a Bureau of Indian Affairs police escort, because they say that they're afraid to come in to plow the road because of the water protectors, which is completely silly, which all they're doing is refusing to plow the roads out for the people. So that's the status that we're in right now. I'm going to be here tomorrow morning when the council convenes. I've been serving as legal counsel for Phyllis Young. Phyllis Young is one of the longtime tribal council members here. She's been assigned responsibility by the tribal council to stop the pipeline from coming onto their sacred lands. David Archambault is the chairman. He is trying to carry on negotiations with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The Corps of Engineers is advocating that all 6,000 people move off the property where they're blocking the drilling of the pipeline and move them to some safe place where they can express themselves under the First Amendment, which means they're trying to get them to agree to get out of the way of the drilling equipment and move to some completely other place. And they're pretending that they're doing it because they're concerned about the safety of the people. The only real threat to the people is the police and the sheriff's department. You know, they opened up with water cannons on the people a week ago, Sunday night. You know, they had three big, huge Bearcats. But instead of being mounted with 50 caliber machine guns, they're mounted with these huge water cannons that are hooked up to these water trucks, and they're a thousand pounds of pressure just pounding these people. And the people are kneeling and praying, and they're pounding them with the water hoses at a sub-freezing temperature, 25 degrees. At the time when they were pounding, they were shooting rubber bullets into the people, concussion grenades, tear gas. It looked like a surreal battle scene out of the Apocalypse Now, you know, and the hundreds of people were injured. One woman is still undergoing operations in Minneapolis in the hospital. She had her arm massively damaged by being hit with a concussion grenade. They're now grafting nerves from her legs and stuff into her arm and trying to rebuild her arm. But they're charging different people. They charged one woman with with assaulting a police officer. There, she's having her arraignment this morning up north. So that's some of the people are up there this morning. But so that there's quite a tense situation that exists here, but the tribal council people and the Lakota people and the Standing Rock people are being supported by others. There are members of the Cheyenne River Tribal Council here in support of them, and the Lakota people and all seven council fires, the Ocheti, Sakowam, Oyate, the people of the seven council fires, have all taken positions supporting the Standing Rock people here. So I believe that the council, there's a significant chance that the council will pass the resolution tomorrow morning, in formally inviting the people to remain and to pray for the stopping of the pipeline. Everybody who is listening to this show should contact the White House and contact President Obama and ask him to order his U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to stand down and to refuse to give an easement to the Dakota Access Pipeline people. Now, it's important for people to know that the Dakota Access Pipeline that people hear so much about is, in fact, just a little LLC, a limited liability corporation that they've set up to protect themselves. They are representing the Energy Transfer Partners, which there are four partners in, but all of them are really representing Sunoco, the Sunoco Oil Company, which is drilling oil up in the Bakken, up in North Dakota, farther up, and all they're trying to do is save more money. They've got trains with big, huge oil tankers on them. They've got trucks that have been able to move the oil out of there. They're only doing this because they want to save more money to make more profit for their stockholders. That's all this is. And the fact is, they aren't going to be providing any of this oil to anybody in the United States. This is not anything for national security to provide energy for the people. They're going to be selling this internationally. They're going to be through this pipeline. They're going to go all the way down to Illinois, where they can refine it and then ship it out through the Great Lakes to sell internationally. And now, and also we've got the additional threat coming up with Trump coming in. Trump has said that he is going to now reverse Obama's position on the tar sands pipeline, you know, off on the western edge of the Standing Rock Reservation. So the people have made a stand here. There's 6,000 people here. And the fact is, we're now up to 1,000 veterans are going to be coming in here on the 4th to stand between the police and the sheriff's department, you know, in their full armor, that they have full body armor and they're armed. Our people, the veterans, are going to be completely unarmed, but they're coming in full uniform, and they're going to align themselves all along the northern boundary of the tribal land to block the pipeline and to protect the people from being attacked by the police like they did last Sunday. So that's the situation that we have here. We're hoping that the people who are listening will contact the White House and insist that Obama order his U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, number one, to not authorize the Morton County Sheriff's Department and the North Dakota State Police to come onto the tribal land, and also that they refuse to have him order them not to grant the easement for the pipeline people to drill
under the
land.
Danny, let me give that number out. So people in this audience, call the White House and share your concerns. Call 202-456-1414. That's 202-456-1414. And I'm sure that we have a huge audience, so I'm sure that this audience will call. Be respectful, please.
Yeah.
If you're respectful when you call and say, I'm calling on behalf of the Native American population, you're standing with the Standing Rock protesters and the tribes, you do not want their land in any way adulterated. You want the President of the United States to tell all of the Corps of Engineers to stand down, and that all the sheriff's deputies stand down, and all armed forces to stand down. He's the commander-in-chief. What surprises me, Danny, is that it's relatively simple. Here you have you, Danny Sheehan, you're working with the tribal elders and leaders to plan for the next steps because the protesters are being ousted and officials are set to close the protest campsites. The Dakota Access Pipeline is bringing dirty bacon crude oil through Sioux sacred lands underneath the Missouri River, and hence the water crisis behind it. The $3.7 billion pipeline would carry 470,000 barrels of crude daily through the North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and end up in Illinois, as you stated. Right now, the National Guard troops and the Morton County Sheriff's Department and various other police departments are using flashbang concussion grenades, rubber bullets, which are not rubber, they can kill you, mace, yes, tear gas, and as you said, the enormous water pressure. And that's what we would expect out of, let's say, East Germany and the Stasi. And the temperatures, you said, are 22 degrees. That does not include wind chill, which means that it's below zero. So a lot of people sprayed with water in those environments could end up developing serious health conditions. Now, from what I understand, but I have not independently confirmed it, General Wesley Clark, who I have a lot of issues with, by the way, I'll be doing a new special, Danny, in the next week, where we're going to do an hour special on the Progressive Commentary Hour, showing that everything we were told by the mainstream media and the White House and UN and NATO about the invasion of Yugoslavia was a lie. And we've got to remember who was the head of the UN at that time, and one and the same. So on that issue, of all that happened, and now we can prove the lies. And so, but anyhow, I'm told that Wesley Clark is now trying to mobilize veterans. You're saying it's about 1,000 veterans to come to the protesters'
yes,
assistance.
Yes,
and
yes.
And so it creates this conundrum, and that is, on the one hand, you have a president that is loved by a lot of people, but has done everything humanly possible to destroy the quality of life for the average person. He has betrayed every single statement he has made. Hillary Clinton, even worse, even more of a militarist, even more of a warmonger, even more of a person who has helped only the top percent. And I said this yesterday in a lecture. I had premiered my new film yesterday out in Long Island, packed house, nice people. And I said, all you have to do is stop being a Republican or Democrat for a moment. Stop being the good liberal or the good conservative for a moment. And just ask yourself, in the last 32 years, with the Clinton 8-year administration, the Bush administration for 8 years, the Obama administration for 8 years, and before that, the Reagan administration for 8 years, show me how life for the average person improved, life for animals improved, animal rights, human rights around the world improved, how the world was made a safer place because of these administrations, and how the average worker today is faring, the standard of living, the quality of life, the amount of debt, the amount of hardship, the amount of laws that punish them, including making being poor a crime, homelessness a crime, return of debtors to prisons. All of these people participated in it, all of them. And these are permanent governments. It doesn't matter who's in the White House. The people who control who is selected before they're elected control everything. And I said, so show me what, where you've seen, except for Bernie Sanders, and good for Bernie Sanders for going out there and calling it like it is. And good for Chris Hedges and good for the other people who've gone out there. But wouldn't you think that a president who was for the people and his wife or the Clintons would have gone out there to show some moral support for this? Never. So at the end of the day, we have to distinguish what a person says from what they do. I'm going to judge people by what they do, not what they say. And when we see that the top politicians have never gone there, the top media people have avoided the story. No media has taken the story of the person that almost lost her arm or the woman, a young girl who was shot in the face. No one has told their story. But if you've got a major story, and isn't it the truth that if it bleeds, it leads? Why, with all this bleeding, hasn't there been any leading? The only media who've covered this honorably and accurately have been the alternative media, Truth Dig and Consortium News and Progressive Radio Network and the others. We're on top of this. and nothing being done by the mainstream media at all to tell the truth. If anything, everyone stays away from it. So that should tell you a lot. So now you bring in the military, ex-military. A, they were exposed to depleted uranium, toxic vaccines. They were put in wars that had nothing to do with American security or freedom and nothing to do with freedom and democracy, the people they were invading. They were engaged as witless combatants, unfortunately, in regime change, where corporate interest, who needed the natural resources or the privatization of existing assets, were the goal. And after all these dead and injured and after all that suffering, and over 1 million veterans today suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder or Gulf War syndrome, damage to their body, not a thing done to help them. So now you have a lot of angry people. And the Americans with anger should take their rage and convert that, which is non-constructive, into outrage, into something positive, which is constructive. Because from outrage, you can stand up, you can protest, you can boycott, and we could then look around to see who joined us and who did not. So when the people look around and they see the 6,000 people who took their time and energy and expense to be there at great risk, and then they see the millions of people who did not. We had 174 million Americans participate in Black Friday, buying crap they didn't need with money they don't have, creating debt that is going to overwhelm them just to keep a so-called, you know, a corporate economy going forward, all based upon illusion. Well, it's time that those people also awakened, that there's a whole lot of reality they should at least acknowledge. And so for those who acknowledge it and the vets who are going there, and I know a lot of vets who are going there, good for you. Stand up, because if it's going to be another Kent State, and I hope it doesn't become Kent State, but you've got a lot of robots out there who forgot what it is to put on a badge. Who are you serving? Who are you protecting? Because right now, all of them are there at the behest of the power elite, including all under the complete watchful eye of the Justice Department, the CIA, and the corporate interest. So you're there to serve and protect the richest from unarmed, peaceful demonstrators protecting the natural land. With that said, I want to read you something from Nat Perry from a consortium. It's called A Tradition of Forgotten Indian Rights. Quote, in 1980, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the government had illegally taken this land and awarded $120.5 million to the Sioux Nation based upon the market value of the land in 1877, plus interest. For nearly four decades, however, the Lakota Sioux have refused to accept payment and instead continued to demand that the United States return the territory. Today, the Sioux people are continuing to take a stand on these principles, the flashpoint now being the Dakota Access Pipeline, which upon its completion is expected to transport 470,000 barrels of crude oil a day across several states. Sioux tribe members and their allies have protested this pipeline for months, raising concerns about the threat it poses to their water supply, the effects that the fracked oil will have on the climate, and the process by which the project was approved, saying that it failed to take into account native rights. Quote, we live with so many broken promises, there's no reason for it. This was the chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe. We understand what lands we own and what lands were illegally taken from us. The government, of course, is responding the way it always has to Native American resistance, through brute force. Over the past few months, police, private security forces have viciously suppressed the water protectors, sicing dogs on them and arresting them for trespassing. The repression, which a group of United Nations experts call, quote, excessive and increasingly militarized, culminated last Sunday, as you mentioned, Danny, in some of the worst violence against Native people seen since the 1973 siege of nearby Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Police fired tear gas, rubber bullets, pepper spray, and water at hundreds of protesters in the sub-freezing North Dakota weather late Sunday night and early Monday morning, following an attempt by protesters to remove burned vehicles blocking Blackwater Bridge in order to enable emergency vehicles and local traffic to move freely. The police assault led to several reported cases of life-threatening hypothermia. Quote, it is below freezing right now, and the Morton County Sheriff's Department is using a water cannon on our people. That is an excessive and potentially deadly use of force, said activist Dallas Goldtooth. Every aspect of this appears to violate the letter and spirit of the 1868 Laramie Treaty, in which the federal government not only promised to respect Sioux land rights, but also to come to the aid of Native people if they are wronged by outside forces. Quote, if bad men among the whites or among other people subject to the authority of the United States shall commit any wrong upon the person or property of the Indians, the United States will proceed at once to cause the offender to be arrested and punished according to the laws of the United States and also reimburse the injured person for the loss sustained, end quote. Now, that's in the treaty. So, I believe if you're going to arrest anyone, arrest the owners of the pipeline and arrest all the sheriff deputies, the sheriffs, the militarized private police, and the National Guard. Have them arrested because they're the ones in violation. The President of the United States, you're aware of all this. But just like when people came by the hundreds to protest this pipeline originally, or the XL pipeline originally, you stayed comfortably inside the White House looking out as braver people than you, people with real courage, real character, real spiritual values, Chris Hedges and many others, linked arms, knowing that they'd be arrested for protesting what you should have protested. But I forgot, you're the good liberal Democrat, and we know what they've done to the country in the last 30 years. And yet, if you even have a picture of FDR in the White House or in Congress, it should be taken down because you do not deserve to look at a face of a real liberal. In fact, Eisenhower was a better liberal Republican than you have ever been a liberal Democrat. But I can say that about all the Democrats right now. Shame on them. So those are my personal views, and I stand behind them. When I came to Washington with 8,000 marchers in protest against GMOs, and we stood out in front of the White House, and we asked you, please listen to what we have to say. And we gave you all the documentaries. We gave you articles about the dangers of GMO. No one looked at them. No one contacted us. Instead, you passed the DARC Act, which supported the genetically modified manufacturers like Monsanto, but Hillary Clinton has one of the top executives Monsanto had on her campaign staff. It's just a corporatocracy. That's all it is. But this is one of those moments in history that we must stand behind the Native population. We must stand behind the protesters. We must stand behind them as a country and give them our full unconditional support. Our hope is that there will not be a negative reaction. But that will be an irony if the people who were the bravest who went into war, even though I'm opposed to those wars and I'm opposed to the politics that got them in the war, I do not blame the soldiers. They were unfortunately unwitting pawns. They believed in the lies they were told. They were propagandized. So we are for them. So those are my final thoughts on this. Danny, your final thoughts.
My final thoughts are, as I said, please give the number again to the White House for people to call and ask the president to stand down the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and have them refuse to grant a certificate of easement onto this property. That's the key, and order them to stand down and refrain from attempting to evict the demonstrators, because the thousand and perhaps more of the U.S. veterans are coming to stand between them now as the symbol of their resistance, and understand that people should protest out in front of every single one of the Wells Fargo banks. Wells Fargo is financing in part.
They're a complete criminal organization. You're aware of that,
yes.
Right?
Yes, and so that they should protest that and tell them to stop the pipeline and withdraw their financing, and they should also boycott every single Sunoco station and protest at the Sunoco stations to tell them that we know who they are. They can't hide behind these limited liability corporations or this energy transfer partners. You know, people know that this is Sunoco, and they need to protest this and get the president to step in. All of our people are peaceful. They're here praying. They have spiritual leaders with them. They're doing spiritual ceremonies every morning and every afternoon and every night, and they're there to stay. We need your support.
Danny, I'm going to give the number again. The number is 202 to the White House. Please be respectful when you call. 202-456-1414. 202-456-1414. And Danny, I would be out there. I am going to be off shortly to help in a Syrian refugee camp. A group of doctors have invited me to help with the malnourished pregnant or women and their children and babies.
Yes.
They're dying. So I'm going over. I'm going to spend up to a month helping them each day get their health back. I'm making arrangements to get them some food. And by the way, if you'll let me know, Danny, but I'll send a truckload of organic food out, enough to feed a couple thousand people.
Yeah, please do. And we'll handle all that here in the headquarters.
Okay, I'll get a truck going out tomorrow. Okay.
Fantastic. Okay, thank you, Gary. Thank you all for your support. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe thanks you, and the people from the Seven Council Fires are with you.
Good. Danny Sheen, representing the legal, he's, of course, one of the greatest legal scholars in America. He's representing the Native Americans, and he is a good fighter. You want him on your side. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone? For those of you who are traveling, you can always listen Monday to Friday at noon to 1, where I've been for 40 years, every day, over any portable listening device, a computer, a cell phone, or a telephone. Here's the number you call to listen live. 701-801-3662. 701-801-3662. But let's say you don't have time at noon. You want to listen to it later in the evening over a portable device or telephone. Call 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. And you can go to the archives for any program you missed. Before I get into my commentary, which I wrote coming back yesterday, I want to thank the good people of Woodstock and the wonderful progressive radio program up there, station, Randy and all the people that do all the volunteer work to make that happen. What a great group of people you are. Wonderful human beings up in Woodstock. It's like knocking on a door and someone opens and says, hey, dude, what decade is it? And you say, where you been? I've been kind of hanging out up here for the last 40 years. A different type of people up in Woodstock. But then the next day, out in Long Island yesterday, I premiered my new film to a group at the Huntington Arts. And I do that because I really like the progressive community out in Huntington. And totally different group of people, Pack Theater, nice group of people, a lot of doctors, engineers. A lot of doctors came up afterwards talking about how, wow, we need this information. And so I want to thank all the people who came to both premieres. Now, here's the deal, because we've got 99.9% of our audience lives out of the New York area. So I put together a special internet premiere for tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. Just go to either prn.fm, that's prn.fm, or if you forget that, progressiveradionetwork.com, or if you forget that, garynoll.com, or my Facebook, and it'll show you a button to listen, to watch the film, Plant Codes. Just push it. All right, and it'll give you all the information you need. It's tomorrow evening, followed by a whole a webinar where I'm going to be taking your questions from all over the world. So all of you who are the family of doctors over in Ireland who listen every day, to the people, the group at the Sorbonne who listen every day, I get these emails from around the world. Tomorrow evening, Eastern Standard Time, 7 p.m., that's Eastern Standard Time, you can watch the full documentary followed by however long it takes to answer the questions that people have, and that'll happen tomorrow evening. Now, I've come up with a new term. It's called Trumpocracy. Now, what does it mean? And I was thinking about what does a Trump administration represent? And so what this represents, it represents, first of all, many things. It represents aristocracy. It represents the financial aristocracy, the corporate aristocracy. So an aristocracy is the government of a state by its best citizens, meaning its wealthiest citizens. Then you have autocracy, which is a government by one person with absolute power. And Donald Trump is not a person who wants to share power. So he's very autocratic. So we have to include that. And then a barbarocracy, and that is the government ruled by barbarians, because the people who are warmongers, those are the people working in the corporations, running the corporations, whose only resolve is to keep business coming in by keeping people fearful that somehow we are going to be invaded by Russia or overwhelmed by China or invaded by a bunch of jihadists. So these are the barbarians, because they do not think about the consequences ever of their actions. We have left over 20 million dead people in the world since World War II, the United States, and its different actions or participations around the world. Over 3.2 million in Vietnam alone, and over 1.5 million in Iraq. So only a barbarian could do that, someone who is completely desensitized to the empathy of others. Well, Trump is completely desensitized to the empathy of anything. So we have to add that in. And then we have to also look at bureaucracy. Now, here's the contradiction. Government by officials, where nothing works as it should. There's the taxpayer pay for it all. There's no accountability. No responsibility. Look at the Veterans Administration and how screwed up they are not helping our vets. So you have a group of people who don't care about how something gets done. Just get it into a motion. And yet the very people like a Trump don't like bureaucracies, but then they create their own massive bureaucracies. They exploit them. Then you have a corporatocracy, meaning corporate governance. The one thing you notice if you look at the people that Trump is selecting or is has selected, for example, Kathleen Troye McFarlane, she was educated at George Washington University and Oxford University and MIT, where she got her PhD. And then she became a national security analyst and a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Boy, should that send up a big red flag. Anyone associated with the Council on Foreign Relations should be suspect of being an ideologue and biased. And she held posts in the Nixon administration, the Ford administration, and Reagan administrations as an aide to Henry Kissinger on the National Security Council. Well, anyone who had anything to do with Henry Kissinger should be suspect. He's a warmonger. He should be tried and imprisoned for crimes against humanity instead of lauded and applauded and embraced. She was a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee staff. And she was a speechwriter to Secretary of Defense Caspar Weinbrenner and later the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs and Pentagon spokesperson. I mean, she's a propagandist. So the key is that she is a person that believes that whatever the corporatocracy wants, they should get. So therefore, under a Trump administration, Trumpocracy, you're getting the corporate governance. But then you also have in time, you're going to end up with something equivalent to a despotic government run by a small individual group of individuals, as you have in the Middle East, where they don't care about anyone. And also you have ideocracy, which is a governance of a state according to the principles of a particular political ideology. They're purely ideologues. Then you have a kleptocracy. You're not going to have Trump near anything that he's not going to try to take home with him. He's one of those guys that would go someplace and steal the ashtrays. So you're going to have a government of thieves. Well, you now have a government of thieves. In fact, you've had nothing but a government of thieves. It's just that we make them seem something other than what they are. If you ask them, how many of you are working here for the public good, you'll find a small percentage. how many are working because it enhances your wealth, your power, and prestige. Then all these hands go up. That is kleptocracy. Everything for themselves. And then you also have government by the wealthy. That's a plutocracy. And then you have, I would add two more in there. Technocracy, which is a government controlled by elites of technical experts, but without common sense or reason or wisdom. And they never think about, what about, we know we can now make a nuclear bomb, but should we have made it? Shouldn't we have tried to get rid of all the ones we have and work with treaties around the world to get rid of Israel's and all the rest? The answer is yes. They're more interested in how much money can we make and how can we make something that didn't exist that we don't need that can only be destructive. That's your technocrats. Then you also have to consider what has been behind the shadows in the White House for decades, and that is a theocracy. A theocracy is a form of government in which God or a deity is recognized as the king or immediate ruler. We can't have that out in the open, so it's always there behind the scenes. You see that in the religious right. And you also have what could be a slavocracy, meaning dominated by slaveholders, except today's slaveholders are the people who own the corporations that are bringing in slave labor products from China, from India, dresses, 900 million, from the Middle East countries and the Balkans now also, and Bangladesh, 14 cents an hour. So if you are in a corporation and you're making your Nike shoes and you're exploiting labor in the local country to do it, all we see is the head of Nike giving to some charity where he gets a tax deduction and being praised for it. We don't see how he made his money. So the White House will be dominated by slaveholders. And then finally, you have pornocracy. And the pornocracy are ruled by prostitutes. And these are the people who represent the people, how they can sell themselves. And we've seen this, where for a price, you pay, you get access. Well, then someone is acting like the pimp, and someone's acting like the prostitute, and we should pay attention to this. Unless we want to legalize. If you want to legalize prostitution, fine. There's good reasons to do that, but at least admit who's the pimps. We got a lot of pimps. They're lobbyists, they're legislators, they're vice presidents, presidents, ex-presidents. They're people who are willing to sell the power of their position because they can. And we call it good business instead of what it is. Now that brings me to the second issue, and that is, I believe that we make a mistake when we do not honor the wise men and women throughout history. We've had many, into the thousands, rarely in their own time are they appreciated. More often than not, they're shunned because they do not conform. They do not march to the same beat. These are people who are unique in their thoughts, how they process information, and therefore they're always considered a threat, more often than not in their day. But I believe if we go back and we look at some of the finest minds throughout history, we could be guided in our solution orientation today. People such as Spinoza, back in the Netherlands in the mid-1600s, he was a Jewish philosopher who was excommunicated from his congregation in Amsterdam under what is called a herem, a permanent ban, and to be cast out from all the tribes of Israel, and his name to be blotted out from under the sun. Why? He was a person that challenged the orthodoxy. He was more of an atheist with a pantheist in undertones, and he possessed intellectual courage, and he was a prophet to speak truth to the lie about the ugly truths of society. And he, writing largely, focused on how principles of toleration and compassion in a society are essential. And if you don't have that, then you're going to erode what a society should be. And he was relevant because he speaks directly to how people will sacrifice their freedoms for security and warned about how religious zealotry influences law and public notices and policies to a nation's cultural detriment. So boy, do we need that today, thinking how much religious intolerance we have around the world and what people are willing to do in the name of their religion or sect or part of their religion that has nothing to do with a higher spiritual principle. He is the one who said, peace is not an absence of war. It is a virtue, a state of mind, a disposition of benevolence, confidence, and justice. He also said, "To give aid to every poor man is far beyond the reach and power of every man. Care for the poor is incumbent on society as a whole." Well, that should give truth to the lie that you only help the person that is capable of doing something in return. No, not in Spinoza's world. Then you had Ernest Becker, a Jewish-American anthropologist and philosopher who earned the Pulitzer Prize for his groundbreaking work, The Denial of Death. And his philosophical psychology centered around understanding how evil in the world was a consequence of humans' need to deny death. He was fired from Syracuse University for coming to the aid of his mentor, Thomas Sowes, who I knew, by the way, and had many conversations with, over his opposition to modern psychiatry. Then he said, "Man is literally split in two. He has an awareness of his own splendid uniqueness and that he sticks out of nature with a towering majesty, and yet he goes back into the ground a few feet in order to blindly and dumbly rot and disappear forever." You had, in my opinion, the finest poet in history. And I love poetry, but I have met no one who could meet the insights of the 13th century Persian Rumi. That's R-U-M-I. He was a Sufi mystic, a jurist, a theologian, and a scholar and a poet. Many parts of the Islamic world would appreciate his magnus opus, the poems and the prosaic essays and tales. And in fact, many considered the second Quran. His poetry diffuses the boundaries between the sacred and the profane. Love of the divine becomes no different than the love of a passionate lover, a parent or a child. To love is to love, and to love all of humanity. His spiritual vision went beyond sectarian and religious differences. And boy, is his message today needed. He was the one who said, "On the seeker's path, wise men and fools are one." And then we had Alexis Tocqueville, a French philosopher. He was a political prophet, and most important was his book called Democracy in America. He predicted slavery would divide the U.S. in violence. He predicted that Native Americans were too proud of their ancestral traditions to ever succeed in the world of the white man. And when he traveled to the United States in 1830, he saw that eventually the United States would be ruled by a tyranny upheld by the majority, and there's your Trumpocracy. He said this, "Eventually American citizens will be reduced to nothing better than a flock of timid and industrious animals, of which the government is the shepherd." We had from Germany in the 1970s Oswald Spengler. His main work, The Decline of the West, two volumes, published in 1918 and 1923, respectively, and it outlines the stages by which the civilizations collapse. And the first book is clearly defined as a paradigm shift, without using this terminology, and he saw the rise of decadence as contributing to our modern civilization's collapse. By the way, Chris Hedges speaks about this so frequently, and also he predicted and gave a philosophical insight into how the push and increasing pace of technology would be used as a perfect tool alienating people from their true nature and perhaps lead to humanity's annihilation. And just look today at so many people who cannot communicate eye to eye, person to person, but have so-called friends reload over the internet. The number one watched thing on the internet's porn. Well, exactly how does porn make us a better world or better people? Yet where are the people watching porn educating themselves in that same time upon all the other critical issues that impact us today? From what they're buying, do we need it? Do you need it? No, more often than not. the material possessions, to what is the purpose of your life? And we're not asking those questions. He said, quote, the new plutocratic elites that have now replaced organic aristocracy have imposed material gain as the only principle worth pursuing, reducing the entire human interaction to an immense economic transaction. And since the masses can never be fully satisfied, it is understandable that they will seek change in their existing politics, even if change may spell the loss of liberty. Well, he was very much like the Buddha. He found that if you read the Buddha, of course, you know that he talked about the decay is due to the lack of a moral imperative to enact compassion. And then you have one of my favorites, Bertrand Russell. He was a British philosopher, mathematician, historian, social critic, and political activist, a founder of what became known as the analytical philosophical movement, and a leader of the humanitarian movement called the freedom of thought. He was a staunch anti-war activist, anti-nuclear weapons activist. He was liberal, but in the true sense of a liberal, not what has morphed into this perversion of liberal concept that the Clintons and Obamas and others use. And he warned of dangers of imperialist motivations and actions. His writings on the philosophy of science are important because although he argued in favor of a scientific society, as he called it, he also gave clear and dire warnings about science becoming a religion, a cult, by scientists. I said this yesterday to the crowd. We should understand that we are being led to believe that the only virtue, the only value, is that which science has proven. And I argue that reality always supersedes scientific understanding, let alone explanation. Hence, science does not understand the spirit, prayer, and that which allows us to become whole human beings. Plato, great, great Greek philosopher, as was Aristotle. And we can see together, since Aristotle was Plato's student, but took his master's teaching in a different direction, based upon more on reason, and I believe they should both be read side by side. I believe you should have a book of Aristotle and a book of Plato, and read one chapter, then read the other's chapter, and see the difference between them. Now, Plato taught his students that all of us want to be a part of something higher, a transcendent reality of which the world we see is only a small part, and which unites everything into a single, harmonious whole. All of us, although largely unconsciously, he said, want to crawl out of the cave of darkness and ignorance and walk into the light of truth. Aristotle, on the other hand, said that the light of truth is found here in the material world, and our job is to understand and find out our place in it. And this is why he is often regarded as the father of Western science. His first books, by the way, were about biology and physics and astronomy and psychology. So Plato would ask, what do you want your world to be? Aristotle would say, how do you fit into the world that already exists? I support Plato on that. Mahatma Gandhi must be included, one of the first to speak for a humane global civilization that would take seriously the needs of most needy. His teachings and the model he lived in life is responsible for influencing hundreds of organizations around the world. He was far beyond simply being a Hindu. He spoke for an integral spirituality that begins with our own spirituality at an individual level. Few realize he has been called an apostle of applied human ecology, a harbinger of the green environmentalism. It was he who said, there is sufficiency in the world for man's needs, but not for man's greeds. Then you have Hannah Arendt, the German-Jewish political theorist. And She refused the title philosopher. And some of the most brilliant writings ever put to paper about the nature of power, authority, totalitarianism, and direct democracy. If you read Chris Hedges, which I suggest you do, or Cornel West or Henry Giroux, they're always quoting her. She escaped the Holocaust by becoming came to the United States, and she became close to Marxist literary critic Walter Benjamin. She held teaching posts in Berkeley, Princeton, University of Chicago, and Stanford and Yale. And she was a Zionist, but who supported having a Jewish Arab federated state in Palestine. Her most important books are The Human Condition, Her Philosophy of Vital Activism, and The Origins of Totalitarianism. And she said, "The sad truth is that most evil was done by people who never made up their minds to be good or evil." Now I have more, many more, Montaigne, Menicus, Henry David Thoreau, Voltaire. We have dozens more, but we're out of time. I just think it's time that we took a look back, a look at the great minds in our world that we've been blessed with, and dust off the books, or go buy the books, or go online and get the books, and start to read about the great philosophical input, because now is the time when we need something deeper than polemic, rage, the ability to protest. We have to have a deeper understanding of what should be protested, what should take its place, and how to do so in a nonviolent way. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.